Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, my next guest in August 2019, her son Avery Green tragically drowned in a swimming pool accident, and he was just 3 years old. And his mum, Amanda, who will speak to us now, has become an advocate for early learning water safety for young children in preschools, creches and early learning centres. So on the line now to share her story, we have Amanda Cambridge, spokesperson for the Hold Hands Water Safety Ireland campaign. First of all, Amanda, thank you for coming on the show. Can you share with us as much as you're comfortable sharing about your son Avery's tragic drowning at the age of three? And it's important for all people to understand and hear what happened.
It is. I think it's very important. You know, I could easily just come on and say, yeah, my son, you know, drowned, and I feel it wouldn't have any impact. But if I, you know, went into my story and explained my reality, I think, you know, it would hit homes and hit parents a lot harder, because water doesn't pick and choose. You know, we were a normal family who just were on holidays. We've been going to the same place for the last 15 years, and it was myself, my dad and my three children. I was cleaning the apartment because his dad was coming over that morning on a flight from Cork. You know, we all want a tidy house for when somebody arrives. So, yeah, just cleaning around, cleaning the bathroom. Avery was on the couch watching Paw Patrol, Paul having his bottle with his blankets. And when I came back out, unfortunately, he wasn't there. So I looked around and couldn't see him and couldn't hear him, and called him and finally went outside, and the neighbour in the apartment next door just happened to be coming up his steps, and you know, eventually kind of said the words that, did I hear right, that there's a baby in the pool? And I automatically knew then that, you know, it was our Avery. He had walked out the doors. The doors were closed, but they weren't locked. And he was very inquisitive, and, you know, he wasn't a walker, he was a runner. So he walked out the door and down to the pool, and unfortunately, yeah, he drowned. And the neighbour on the opposite side, who was out for a walk with his son at the time, saw Avery in the pool and managed to pull him out. And, you know, there was paramedics and ambulance, and unfortunately, we were just one of the unlucky families that water has taken our three-year-old child. So it is so, so important. You know, it's something very close to our hearts. And it's tragic, but it's nice to do something positive out of it.
It's truly unimaginable, Amanda, for anyone to understand what that might feel like. And it really breaks everyone's hearts. And it takes such true courage to speak about it. And not only that, you're an inspiration, because you're involved with a program to make sure that no other parent or family goes through what you had to experience. Could you tell us about the Hold Hands campaign and about how that came about?
Well, in 2019, unfortunately, Avery wasn't the only child that drowned that year. There was a child, a little girl, a few days before Avery, and there was children after Avery. And we were just sitting around one day and, you know, what can we do? You know, Jesus, this can't happen. You know, this has to stop. And a friend of mine got in touch with somebody she knew in Water Safety Ireland, and we explained to them what had happened and how easily it can happen, because, you know, Avery was there 1 minute and next minute he was gone. And yeah, Water Safety Ireland came on board, and we came up with a great program for 3 to 5 year olds in preschools and caregivers.
Super.
Called Hold Hands.
Super. And you've partnered with Water Safety Ireland, as you mentioned. How's it been going? How's the program being rolled out?
Well, we rolled out over 4,000 packs to preschools and caregivers, and, you know, the response we've gotten has been absolutely amazing. You know, children seem to really like it, and they seem to be engaged with it. And you know, it's made up of 6 storyboards of all scenarios, because obviously, yes, we do live on an island and we are surrounded by water. There is water in the home, like the bat. We have our lakes, our ponds. You can drown in a bucket of water because it literally only takes 30 seconds for somebody to drown. Yeah. And the whole hands program is all about teaching, you know, these little children who are our future to love the water, respect the water, know that water can be so much fun and you can have great experiences, but, you know, it is very dangerous. And to hold hands with an adult, and yeah, the response we've gotten has been great, and parents can go on to www.holdhands.ie and they can see all the storyboards and they can sit down with their child and go through them, because it covers the farm, the beach, the pool, the lake, the home. It covers every aspect of water, and there's different scenarios, you know, wear your life jacket, hold your hand, know your depth. We're really proud of it and absolutely delighted to be a part of it.
Well done, brilliant. And with the hot weather, with more people than usual, and lots of people will see people at the beach or beside water in these coming days, what would your main message be to both parents and little children?
My main message would be just be absolutely so vigilant around water, no matter whether you're at the beach, whether you're at the park. You know, if you're fortunate in this weather, you know, I know they're like gold stuff now at the minute, you know, to have a paddling pool. If it has taken you 4 hours to fill up that paddling pool at night, during the day, pop those tags at night. Empty out the pool, because at the end of the day, the pools are replaceable. Your children aren't. You know, teaching children, you know, their favourite toys, their balls, if they go into the water, don't follow them, because those toys are replaceable. Our children aren't. Life jackets, life vests, you know, they are so important. And it gives the parents a peace of mind as well. You know, that there is that aspect of, you know, having that safety vest or that life jacket on. And they're there, you know, I think they're made from 6 months up. They're there to be used. So, you know, I would say be so vigilant around water. Don't start now, or I say don't start maybe 2 days before you go to the beach or 2 days before you go on holidays. Start now, for you know, it's a life lesson. It will grow with them. Yep. They learn to love the water.
Amanda Cambridge, spokesperson for the Hold Hands Water Safety Ireland program. You really are an inspiration. Thank you so much for talking to us today. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much.
And like Amanda mentioned, there are lots of really important and engaging, colourful storyboards and posters to help teach parents and children the best ways to communicate water safety on Water Safety Ireland's website, www.watersafety.ie and holdhands.ie.
Spirit.
It's very rare that Ireland gets a long run of such hot weather. Usually in weather like this, we are abroad with air conditioning and fans. And has the heat impacted your sleep? Or are you sleeping better in the warm weather, or tossing and turning with a disrupted sleep? So on the line to give us his tips for getting a good night's sleep during a heat wave, we have sleep coach and expert in fatigue, Tom Coleman. First of all, Tom, something that interests me on this topic of sleeping in the heat is, how much of a psychological thing is it? You're going to bed and you're saying to yourself, oh, I'm just not going to be able to sleep tonight. I'm not going to be able to do it. Is it common for people to have their sleep pattern affected by this kind of heat and their outlook towards it?
It is both are an issue. Like anything in sleep, whether it be stress or anxiety or anything else, you know, what's the narrative that we're telling ourselves, that I'm not going to be able to sleep? I mean, that's not the message that we're going to be giving ourselves. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
We have people who suffer from sleep anxiety. They get more anxious the closer it comes to bedtime. So I certainly, and that's one of the first barriers that we have to kind of overcome and sort of build our belief that we can sleep, or indeed fall back asleep, which again tends to be a huge issue. The heat usually isn't a problem in Ireland, but temperature is a key effector in our sleep, in our circadian rhythm, and our body temperature varies throughout the 24-hour cycle. So that's why it's hugely important that look after the temperature as much as we can in our internal environment and the bedroom and everything else.
I guess you're not really going to give yourself a bit of a pep talk before you go to sleep saying, I can sleep tonight, I can sleep tonight. So what tips would you have for getting a good night's sleep during this heat wave?
During the heat wave, well, I suppose, look, our bedroom environment is hugely important, and I do speak about this even, you know, throughout the year, because we have regularised temperature now in the house. So I would say to people, the temperature of your bedroom will certainly impact your ability to sleep. So we need to keep that very well ventilated if possible. So if you can, open your windows. I would say certainly get a fan. They're not all sold out now. So we'd like to try and keep the temperature of the room nice and cool. Drink more water. We need to really kind of stay hydrated as well. That's really important. Look at your bed. I mean, look at your bed and your bed sheets and things like that, because we can accumulate heat in the bed. And there's some amazing mattress and bed technology now that we can kind of that we can use that have cooling gels and things like that. So get down to Des Kelly and check out some of the lovely mattresses that they have. Invest. Yeah, I mean, this is about investment in our sleep as well. And the other thing is, I mean, traditionally in Ireland, I mean, when I was a child anyway, we had the hot water bottles, and now we can have a cool water bottle. So that's a great tip as well. Is the temperature inside the bed. Put some cold water and ice into it, and that's an ideal thing to help keep you cool.
And if someone finds they're waking up, you mentioned waking up in the middle of the night, because you can take a lot of these precautions before you go to sleep, but you wake up at 2-3 in the morning and the cold water bottle is lukewarm. How do we get back to sleep then?
Well, that's where having like a glass of water by the bed, or even a cloth with some water, because our skin cools 25 times faster if it's wet, and that's why we sweat. Actually, it's the cooling system. So having a damp cloth even beside your bed and having that fan. And look, it's people do wake up even under normal circumstances due to heat accumulation. So if you have any sheets or anything covering you, then throw that off. And allow your body to get really as cool as possible. And that's one of the key signals, actually, for sleep as well.
Well,
turn off the electronics, keep the room really dark, and, you know, try and have really light bedclothes, bed linen.
Sleep coach and expert in fatigue, Tom Coleman, thank you for all of those tips and for talking to us today. Cheers.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you can check out his website, tomcoleman.ie, or Tom Coleman on Twitter or Instagram. Spirit. Now, the world's top athletes have travelled and arrived in Tokyo and are gearing up for the Olympics, which begin this weekend. And our next guest lives in Japan, and he's leading a project called Japan 1 Million, which is an international prayer movement for the Tokyo Olympic Games. And this is his sixth Olympic Games, where he travels to the host city and helps the church there. So on the line, live from Japan, and to tell us more, we have Marty Woods from the Japanese International Sports Partnership. Great to have you on all the way from Japan, Marty.
Oh, it's just really wonderful to be with you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
First of all, you've been involved in faith outreach events for various large-scale sports events, including the London Olympics in 2012 and now the Tokyo Olympics. Tell us about the mission of the work you do with the Japanese International Sports Partnership.
Yeah, well, I first got involved with the Sydney Olympics in the year 2000, hence my Aussie accent. And then, as you said, been at the other Olympic Games. And what we try to do is really help the church to leave the building, to be in the community. The whole nation wants to celebrate when it comes to the Olympics. And so our job is to try and help the church to do that. So we run community festivals. We bring teams in from around the world. And we had such great plans. We had 100 teams planning to come. We were working to reach 1 million people.
Wow.
But it didn't quite happen.
Mm. And your goal is to reach, hopefully still, 1 million Japanese people with the love of God. And, of course, with COVID, plans have changed a little bit. But tell us a bit about Christianity in Japan and your plans for faith outreach now with the current situation.
Yeah. Look, it's a really... I mean, we Japanese people are so lovely and so kind. We've just made so many friends here, but there's such an ignorance of Christianity. I have a friend who, it was only when he was 23 he first heard the name Jesus. You know, less than 1% are in church, and sadly, a lot of people, the average age is 63, so not a lot of young people. So it's really in a desperate spiritual state. And so that's why we had such great excitement, because these community festivals help the church leave the building and be in the community. But yes, with COVID, we just thought, well, all those doors stopped. We couldn't run any of the things that we'd planned, but we said, but here's one thing we can do, and that's to pray. And you know what we're learning? It's so interesting that prayer really is the work. It's the central, most significant thing that we can do. And so that's what's happening. And so not only is it happening amongst the Japanese church, but we're inviting the whole global church to join us to pray a million hours to Japan and an awakening to come to this land.
And it's so great to see you living out your faith there in such a tangible and accessible way with people who aren't necessarily Christians, and but they can still relate and engage with it. Is this the key? Is this the key, bringing the church out and the faith outside of the church building?
Look, I am so convinced. You know, we find, like people say, it's really hard in Japan. Some people say it's the graveyard for the missionaries. But, you know, we're not finding that. We've just seen a number of people coming to faith. Because you see, what the kingdom of God's about, a celebration, a party, and we wanna show a different place. You know, Christians, we can be so serious sometimes. We're just trying to help the church to just experience the love of God and to show it, you know, not just have to talk about it, but to show it. And so, yes, that's what we want to do. That's what we're committed to doing.
So tell us what's coming up, Marty, about and how people can take part across the world in this work.
Yeah, well, you know what we'd love your listeners to do? We'd love them to look at the www.japan1million.com. And on that, they could register, and their church, their home group, Bible study, we'd love them to commit to praying for Japan over the Olympics. An hour a day or an hour a week, they can save the time. They'll get a prayer points sent to them every day. There's lots of information about the state of Japan. But I think more than anything, we want to help. We want to get the world praying for Japan. And in fact, tomorrow morning at 10:30, we're going to have a global prayer meeting. The details are on the website. And we're getting people from all around the world. We're launching the Olympic Games in prayer 90 minutes before the opening ceremony. So your listeners, we'd love to have them join us.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Marty Woods from the Japanese International Sports Partnership, JISP. Thank you so much for talking to us today. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. And you can find out more, like Marty said, at Japan, about Japan 1 Million, and to register for the virtual prayer gatherings and or find their daily prayer updates at Japan1million.com, and that's the number one, like Marty mentioned. Spirit. And our next guest is Ruan Jones of the Irish Catholic newspaper, and he's going to be chatting to us about the latest news stories that they're reporting on. So on the line to tell us more, we have Ruan Jones. First of all, Ruan, there's been a church arson attack going on in Canada. What's been happening there?
How are you doing, Donald? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, so this has been an ongoing thing for the last about a month or so, since mid-June, and it's not just in Canada now, it's now moved into the rest of North America, into the States. I mean, just recently on Canada Day, which is July 1st, many Canadians opted to replace celebrations with large vigils, and on that day there was actually a vandalism case in Portland, which is in the northwest of the States, where protesters stopped at a church and children were encouraged to dip their hands in the paint, covering doors, columns, steps with handprints, basically. And then protesters left a sign outside which read, "Your schools had playgrounds, ours had cemeteries." Now, I mean, in Canada, there's been dozens of churches attacked. There's some Catholic, some not, some on First Nation, which are Indigenous Canadians, some on First Nations grounds, some not. But the spate of fires began June 21st when two historic Catholic churches on First Nations lands were reduced to rubble, basically. And I mean, those fires, which police are still investigating, just destroyed Sacred Heart Church in Pentacon Indian land, and then another on Osoyoos Indian Band land. I mean, all of this stems back to the discoveries of unmarked graves in indigenous residential schools in Canada, and this again was around mid-June when more than 200 bodies were discovered, and then later hundreds of unmarked graves. Now, these schools were a sort of historic aspect or a part of the history of Canada. They were specifically designed to sort of suppress Indigenous identity and Native American assimilation into white society. And many of these were run by Christian or Catholic orders, but they were funded by the state. And I mean, you could kind of compare it to the mother and baby home situation here, where, I mean, I suppose the church was doing a lot of the work that the state wanted them to do, and sort of filling in the gaps in sort of locations where ideally they wouldn't have got involved.
Another story the Irish Catholic has been reporting on is the Pope's decision on the traditional Latin Mass. What's the latest news on this?
Yeah, well, this is something that occurred or came out on Friday, July 16th, when the Pope released a document, Traditionis Custodes, which caused a predictable enough stir, because it introduced restrictions on the traditional Latin Mass, sometimes called, I think, extraordinary form, and it basically rolled back on more permissive legislation which had been there, so that now if priests want to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass, they have to apply to the bishop, and it can't be celebrated in parish settings. This is according to the document. I mean, the full implications of this are unclear. Some bishops already have come out and said that they're just permitting the Latin Mass to be continued to celebrate as it was, and the rest is unclear. I mean, the Pope said that, you know, he did it to preserve unity, and he had asked bishops for their views of the TLM, the traditional Latin Mass, in their diocese, and clearly felt that their responses warranted quick action. Now, I mean, this has been a busy time for the Pope, in fact, because he himself, as many of you will be aware, I'm sure, had just recovered from a routine operation. So he'd only got out a couple of days before this, and has quite a busy calendar ahead of him. I mean, just to talk a little bit more on that, he had a bit of an issue with his colon, basically, and it needed surgery. It was quite a routine operation. I think two-thirds of people over 85 have this issue. So he spent 10 days in Gemelli Hospital, recovering after being admitted July 4th. And while he was there, you know, he visited children on the same floor as him, and afterwards wrote a short reflection on the importance of easy access to good health care. And like, as I say, it's not looking like slowing down for him. He has a packed schedule ahead. And I mean, I know that there had been talk that he'd be trying to visit North Korea, which would be a remarkable thing. I mean, it's very early days yet, so speculative on that. And then closer to home, he'll be leading the World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly, which is Sunday, July 25th.
Spirit. Well, always in the know of the latest celebrity news is Spirit Radio's very own Mary Elizabeth Bruton, who is here with me now to chat about this week's main stories. I always look forward to our little segment together, Miz.
Yes, I've done the research, so no one else has to or ever would want to.
Ever would want to. I don't know if I'd want to anyway. But you're looking at to glimpse at the life and houses of a celebrity. MTV Cribs is set to return.
Yes, anyone who was worth their salt and anything back in the early noughties would have probably spent a lot of time on MTV, as we all did. And one of the main shows there was MTV Cribs, where we all got an insight into celebrity homes. It was hugely popular at the time. And I remember like Mariah Carey and Usher had like really famous episodes. But it is now back on our screens. It's coming out on August 11th on MTV. The lineup this year, that we're going to have the likes of Jordan Woods, Ashley Simpson, Scott Disick, and Nick Young, and a whole host of other celebrities. So it's set to be good. And I love looking inside celebrities' homes, so I'm down for it.
Are you going to be watching the reruns in preparation?
Yeah, I'll start my training. I'll start like watching all the reruns now. I'll start taking notes. I want to see, most importantly in this new season, what are people's fridge looking like? Mm. I need to see inside the fridge.
You do.
Are things stocked?
You need to see if they're staying nutritious, yeah, you know?
Exactly. You know, a lot of the time as well, they kind of went near the end of the original Cribs, like it kind of started to come out that a lot of the homes that celebrities were bringing them inside weren't actually their homes at all, but had rented them from the weekend.
That would be hilarious, going down renting an Airbnb or something like that. And just
check out me gaff, lads.
Check out me gaff. Keeping with LA and Hollywood, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle live outside LA now, and Harry has announced he's releasing a book. Is this a tell-all follow-on from his interview with Oprah?
Yeah, it's looking like it. Like, I mean, trust Harry and Meghan to be more dramatic than the Kardashians. They are managing to get rid of any sort of, like, boring or stuffy view people would have had about the royal family, because they are drama. So they had that tell-all interview with Oprah. This book looks to be a bombshell so far. I mean, so far all we know is just like the pitch from the publishers and from Harry himself. So they're trying to drum up interest, so they're going to dramatize it anyway. But apparently Harry said something along the lines of, like, this book is, it's not about the prince that he was born, but the man he's grown into.
Oh, very dramatic stuff.
I know.
Very, very dramatic.
I'm just like, okay, Harry, like, can't wait. I mean, I'm going to read it. No, that's a lie. I'm going to read the best bits of it that someone publishes online.
Right, well, when I become a prince, I can give you my inside scoop of what it's like to be a prince, just like Prince Harry. So
when you become a prince.
Exactly.
I have high hopes for that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the vote of confidence there. Moving on to the Olympics, Bruce Springsteen's daughter is going to be going there. What's she competing in?
Equestrian.
Oh.
Yeah. She is apparently a very talented equestrian. She started getting into it as her child. As a child, her mom was really into horses, so when they moved out to sort of a place out in New Jersey, there was a horse training place right across the road, and she started getting into horse training from then on. And apparently she actually was in the Dublin Horse Show a couple of years back, and Bruce Springsteen attended it and watched his daughter, supported her as she rode on.
I'm always just so jealous of people like that who have just clearly won the genetic lottery. Bruce Springsteen, an amazing singer, and now his daughter is going to the Olympics for equestrian. Why? It's not fair in two different things as
you
well.
You have it. Your mom's ultra talented, and here you are.
Well, here we are, exactly. And I'm going to be a prince soon as well.
Exactly. Keep your dreams alive.
It's getting there. And there's an Irish link with this too, though, isn't there? This story.
Yeah, well, that's the fact that they were at the Dublin Horse Show.
Of course, of course. And in music-related news, some big concert tickets went on sale today.
Yes,
what
they did. Elton John's tickets went on sale. I've no idea if they're still, they probably sold out at this stage, but Elton John is going to be performing a show in Cork. It's going to be on July 1st, 2022. So the tickets went on sale this morning. If anyone has managed to grab them, like, can you sell them to me for cheaper? And yeah, it looks to be set to be an amazing concert. It's part of his Farewell Yellow Brick Road, the final tour. Honestly, I thought he'd done the final tour about 5 years ago, so I don't know if this
it
is...
It seems like he's coming back time and time again.
I think it's one of those final tours that just will never end. But sure, listen, more power to him. And
how many people have tours like that, I guess?
Barbara Streisand had a never-ending tour, I think.
Who was it as well? Billy Joel kept coming back again and again and again, still playing. Sure, when you have it, you have it. And if you want to keep going on it, why not? Spirit Radio's very own Mary Elizabeth Bruton, thank you so much for sharing a roundup of the latest celebrity news stories from this week.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.